Hey everyone, welcome to our podcast. And I am Wendy Morris, president of For the Love of the Hoof. And I am here today with our head trainer, Brandy Van Allen. Hey Brandy, how you doing today?
Hi everybody, how you doing? Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
So Brandy has a little bit of a background with us. I personally met Brandy about 19 years ago, and when I was running a facility in Golden Valley, Arizona, and I hired her on as a trainer, and she's kind of been with my family ever since, haven't you, Brandy?
Yep, I kind of showed up and never left.
That's right, and she ended up being together with my son, and she gave us three beautiful grandsons, and I couldn't be more happier. So I asked everybody to go ahead and send in some questions for her, and we got about five questions, and I thought I'd go ahead and ask her. Are you ready for this, Brandy?
We're ready for it.
Okay, great. So the first question I have right now is from Carol, and Carol asked, what is your favorite breed to train?
I actually don't have like a favorite breed of horse. I love them all. But if I had to pick one, I like the big butts on the quarter horses, if I had to pick one. And I love the Mustangs because they're so beautiful and majestic.
Oh, that's great to know. And so can you tell me a little bit about what a big butt on a horse means?
A big butt means they got power. They got a motor under them.
Yep, but that's right. And that's so great. And so big butt horses are really good for performance horses, such as barrels, training, reining, cutting, things like that, because they've got the power to move forward, right?
Yep.
That's right. So then we have a two-part question from Susan. And the first part is, what is your favorite bit to use?
As you always see in the videos, I love to use a D-ring snaffle bit. I love to start every horse that we get in a D-ring snaffle bit. That way I can use both hands, I can feel them, I can see what they have, and then we can work from there to see what they'll need. If we need to go up on the bit or use a hack or a Bozell, whatever they might take.
Okay.
Because when the rescues come in, you don't really know what they've been ridden in or what they've been trained in. So I like to use the D-ring snaffle.
And that's probably a very safe choice because you don't want to put a really strong bit in a horse's mouth that maybe never have taken a bit.
Yeah, because then you're going to make that horse look like he has problems when you really don't because he's not used to that bit.
That's correct. Okay, now the second part is, what's your favorite cinch to use?
I like the synthetic cinches because, you know, they're kind of a little bit easier to clean for more winter time, but in the summertime they slide around a little bit. So I really don't have like a favorite brand or anything like that. It's what fits them. Every horse takes a different size cinch, so I have them in all different styles.
That's great. Okay, so Laurel asked, what age horse is suitable for an elderly beginner rider?
Well, that's a really, really good question for that. For an elderly beginner rider, you want a horse that is very easygoing, that is easy to ride, that pretty much anyone can handle, that's been there and done that. There's not like a specific age, it's what the horse knows.
That's a good way to say that because we personally have a beautiful horse named Carol that is really young. She's only 4 years old, but she's got a great start on her.
She is amazing. If you got on her, you would swear to God she was, you know, 15, 16 years old, been there, done that type of horse. But she is only four, but it's all about the training.
That's correct. And so her new owner is really going to enjoy her. Okay, so our second part of this question is actually from Mike. And Mike wanted to know if you suggest a horse with a little bit of lameness for beginners of any age.
Oh, that is a great question. We get here at the rescue, we get a lot of horses in. And just because they have a little gimp or limp does not make them useless. You get the proper medication for them, you get the right horse for the right person, and it's a great starter horse for them. They are safe because they're not going to go out, they're not going to go run barrels, they want to learn to ride. So you want to make sure that they do have a safe horse. And if that horse may have already been there and done that, because he has the limp because somebody has overused him or he's got into an injury. And now what's his life, you know? His life can be more useful if he can handle a rider and be on a little bit of medication. It makes a wonderful horse for beginners.
That's absolutely true. We've placed several horses like that, and we've placed them as children's horses and elderly horses, horses for elderly people, and they've all turned out to be fantastic. It's just a little bit of maintenance and a little bit of love, and hey, you got a good horse for quite a few years.
And that's another thing that people think, oh, well, it's older, it's banged up, it's no good. That is not true, not true at all. They are all diamonds in the rough. A little bit of medication, yes, it might be a little more maintenance, but a little bit of medication and that horse is going to take care of you for years to come. You're giving that horse a chance.
That's really great. So I have another question here. It's from Bethany, and Bethany wants to know, what kind of feed do you suggest you start a horse out on that you don't know?
Well, we always like to start about here. We start about on Bermuda. So that way, because we don't know what they have eaten before, it's an easy for them to digest. And then from there, we will figure out what they need, if they need the alfalfa, grains to fatten up, because every horse is a little bit different. They're all not getting the same exact diet because they don't have the same calorie needs.
Yes, and that's correct. And then some of them can be diabetic and we don't know it. So we go ahead and suggest we start them off with nice Bermuda. And after we get into the horse a little bit, we'll be able to tell if they have any kind of issues. We've had horses before that just strictly cannot eat any alfalfa because they do their woo way out there on the charts, aren't they?
Yes, you'd be surprised. Yes. Yeah.
And it's most people think it's okay just to stick alfalfa and a whole bunch of sweet feed and a whole bunch of supplements at a horse, and that's really not the way to do it. And
that's really, really dangerous because you can founder them, you can colic them. You got to really know what they need, what vitamins, minerals, and what they're lacking.
Yeah, some people laugh at me when I tell them how hot of a place or how cold of a place do you live in, and they say why, and I said, well, that really depends on your feeding schedule, because if, like, when we used to be in Tucson, I would be up at, what, 3 o'clock in the morning feeding those horses, right?
Yeah.
In the summertime, and that's because it got so hot in the afternoon, and if they're eating any kind of alfalfa, that they can colic on that from just being too hot, because alfalfa makes a horse not only mentally hot but physically hot as well. So we go ahead, and that's why we start him off on Bermuda.
Yeah, here's a good example with my little guy Whiskey. Like in the winter time out here, I feed him the alfalfa Bermuda complete pellets, and it has a little bit of grain in there because it gets so cold out here, and I don't blanket him, so that helps him with the body heat and to keep his temperature at decent. Now it is starting to get a little bit better temperatures out here, so now he's just getting the alfalfa Bermuda. He's not getting the grains in there because I don't want him to overheat with his coat, and the weather's getting better out here. I don't need that extra energy or that heat in him with him standing there.
Yes, and I tell you a little secret that was really funny when I used to ride with all my friends in Golden Valley. I would have a friend that I rode with all the time, and she'd be like wanting to come over at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a hot summer day. You know, that just like kills me, right? But she would be like going, oh, the horse is so great, the horses are so great. And I say, well, Christy, that's because the horses are half dead. It's hot out right now. And then the winter time would come, she goes, I don't understand what's going on with my horse, I don't understand. And I go, well, because now they're not half dead. They're like, oh yeah, that's great, the weather is nice, and they're going ahead to be a little bit more frisky. So weather temperatures really do control a horse's and their temperament as well.
Yes, it does. That's a great point. Because when we were back in Tucson, if you remember, we'd have to get up really early or ride late in the evening and turn on the arena lights because you could not ride in the hottest part of the day because, yes, it's not decent for your horse to be out there when it's 115 degrees out, dying of heat, you know, going out on their trail. Yeah, you can stop for water. They can have water. Yes, they can handle it. But is it fair for them? No. Yes, that horse is going to be perfect. But is that horse going to be perfect when that sun's down and, you know, feeling a little frisky? That's when you're really going to see what that horse has got.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, especially if you're going to be working the horse really hard. I mean, like where we used to live in Tucson, we had huge hill that we had to go up. And we tried it a couple times in the summertime.
We walked it.
And we walked that hill for that horses because they would just die trying to get up there. They have to carry our weight and our saddle weight and everything else. And they have to, yeah, they might have four legs and we might only have two, but they work extra hard carrying all our body weight and all the equipment.
I do miss that hill because that hill was great to see their body structure. You could see their conditioning. There was a lot when we took them up the hill. Not every horse will we get from the auction straight go straight up the hill. We had to condition them to see what they would go, how far up they could go. We wouldn't just take a horse and run it up the hill. You would literally just, unfortunately, kill that horse, or that horse would be like so tired at the end. It wouldn't be a good, you wouldn't be able to go on a trail.
Yeah. And here we have a little bit different terrain and our weather is like 20 degrees cooler than Tucson. So that's why I ask everybody, where do you live? What is your region like? You know, and you know, hay is also different in every region too. I mean, it could be totally different here than it is in Tucson, and it's totally different in Arizona than it is in California or Utah or Oregon. So,
and the other thing, if you look around everywhere and everybody feeds different, depends on where you go. Like back east, they feed different than out here out west. So, you know, feed it, it depends on what you're doing and where you're at, weather condition. There's a lot to it.
Yeah, so people don't understand that, but I'm glad that we were able to explain that a little bit to them. And so, Brandy, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, I was just going to let everybody know a little bit about what happens when we bring the horses in after they decompress. I do take them out and I evaluate them. I evaluate every horse pretty much the same but different. Every horse is going to be a little bit different. I'm looking at their body. I'm looking on how they reach. Like, here's a good example. I take them out and I lunge them. Not every horse lunges. Some people don't lunge their horses because that's not what they trained them. They just go saddle them up, get on and ride. You ask that horse to lunge, he's like, what are you asking for me? So when I approach a horse, I approach every horse in the same manner. I want to see if they can lunge. I'm going to see if they can take a saddle. And these are all just the basics. See if they take a saddle, see how they are out on trail. And that's what I do. I see what the horse knows and don't know.
Yes, and I notice sometimes when you're really, really comfortable with a horse that you'll be lying on it sideways and going underneath it and doing all kinds of tricks. And you do that a lot for our kids' horses, I noticed. You act like a kid yourself because, you know, those horses have to be able to have a kid going running up going, oh, what are you doing? You know, and grabbing hold of them and stuff like that. So it's really nice to see that you take the horses to the next level and you can show off that the horse really knows how to do. And so that's, I think, what makes you stand out for most trainers, because you go above and beyond that most horse trainers don't. They just do the basic little things in the round pen, you know, and they might get on and ride them around a round pen. But you actually take them out on the trail for the ones that you're really comfortable with and you know that they can be handled. You go ahead and take them out on the trail. Now, the ones that you know can't go out on the trail right now because they need to be able to have a little bit more training. Let's give an example like Karen. Karen was actually ridden into the ring in the auction by a child. Yeah, and we thought, well, she's got to be pretty good.
Amazing. Went around that ring, looked perfect. Great kid's horse, perfect.
Yeah, when we get her home, what happened, right?
Yeah, well, that goes to show you, we go and we do evaluate them. There's a little bit, like with her, Karen needed more work before I would take her out on the trail. So you see me, to be honest, you see a horse that's out on the trail, me laying over it, laying under it, rubbing all over it, that horse I have 100% trust in. Okay, I go by what the horse knows and don't know. If I can't get him to really listen, like Karen, she was beautiful, she did great in there, but when I evaluated her, she was a little bit stubborn, which we have the videos on there. And she was a little bit stubborn, so no, I'm not going to take her out on the trail till she listens in the round pen a little bit more, and then I take her out on the trail. She could be amazing out on the trail. That's just evaluating her from what I evaluated her to is to there, and then eventually she will be an amazing horse out on the trail. She just needs a little more time.
Yeah, and I think it's a good example of
misrepresenting horses at the auction.
Absolutely, and people think, hey, you know, well, why should I go to a rescue and get a horse when I can just go to the auction myself? And that's all fine and dandy. You know, the more lives we can get saved out there, no matter what, is absolutely beautiful. We appreciate that. However,
though, once again, we'll go back to her. Look at her being at the auction, being sold as a kid's horse. Now imagine first time buyer sitting in that ring. Oh my God, there's an amazing kid's horse. Don't know nothing about horses. Decent price, not too bad. You know, here, let me get it. Take it home. You've seen that horse being ridden in the arena at the auction, moving, going left, going right, going in the circle, not having no issues. They go home, they go to put their kid on it. And it does that. Their kids never rode before. One, the kid's going to be scared to death of the horse, or the horse is going to injure somebody because they don't know or expect that because they're a first-time buyer and they thought this was a broke kid's horse, which, not saying she's not, she needs a little bit of work, but there you go. Once again, somebody will go in and now they think it's the horse. The horse is bad, but the person that brought that horse in, saying it was a kid's horse when it's really not, you never know what the issues are that's behind the horses, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And then what happens to that horse again?
It goes to the auction.
Absolutely. And if we're not there to save it?
It will go to another auction. It'll go to a kill buyer, yeah, or a horse trader and keep going down the road and come back to the auction.
Yeah, and that's going to be really sad on that horse. And the more times that horse is passed around, the worse she gets.
Yes, when all she needed was a little TLC, a little time, a little one-on-one to work with her. They're diamonds in the rough. We just got to polish them up. They are there. You won't know until you work with them. They are diamonds in the rough. They really are.
And a lot of people ask me, what do you think this horse will be, a good kid's horse? And I point blank say, I don't tell you that. I'm not going to tell you if it's a good kid's horse. The reason why is because every child rides differently.
Exactly.
And every situation is different. And we could have a really good horse right here that you would put your kids on and I, who an elderly woman, would ride, right? And then it could get to that person's place and it can be a totally different horse. And the reason why is because...
totally different surrounding. Maybe it's never seen a sorrel cactus. It's only been up north, you know what I mean? There's a good example.
Yeah, so they don't, you know, they have to get completely comfortable again. And that's why we always say, please, please, you know, give your horse at least a 30-day time to settle in and work with your horse.
Decompress, work with them, get to know them.
Don't just stick it in a stall and then walk by one day and expect it to be okay for you to get on. I mean, some horses are like that. But hey, here's a prime example of mine. You know, my horse is 6 years old and she has to be constantly ridden. And if she's not, oh, boy, do I have a handful on my hands.
Right. So,
but, you know, that's my choice. I want to have a horse like that. So, and I work with her all the time. And then, but she's been sitting for a while. So it's a prime example of that. And so we really try to make sure that people get the horses that they want and need. And,
that's why we try to match the horses with the people the best we can with what people tell us their riding ability, what they're going to use it for. Some people do get upset because we'll be like, no, I don't think this is going to be a nice fit for the two of you because, you know, the situations, you know.
Oh, yeah, and I think people appreciate that. Like the person who adopted Carol, they really want Pearl. And I said, well, I don't think so. I mean, Pearl's got some issues, and she's also a Pasifino. So if you get a Pasifino and a quarter horse together, it's not going to happen because the person riding the Pasifino will be long gone, while the person in the back will be with the quarter horse, and they'll be like, wait for me, wait for me. And then there could be an issue because that quarter horse can't keep up with that Pasofino, and then they'll be labeling that horse a bad horse when actually it's not. So we try to go ahead and match the people to the right thing. So.
And then we show our horses for exactly what the horses are. There is no hiding nothing. There's nothing for us to gain except for them to have a great home.
Right. Yeah. And we'll tell you if they have issues or not, because it's all about the horse.
Bad habits or anything. It's all about the horse. It's finding that horse the right home.
Yeah. Because we're not horse flippers. We're a rescue. And we want to make sure that horse isn't going to come back. So we basically want to make sure that they have a forever home.
Yeah.
Instead of being passed around. And so we always welcome our rescues back. That's not an issue. And we also give everybody a 30-day trial period on their horses as well. And they're more than welcome to bring them back at any time. However, we just want to make sure that people understand that if you go to an auction on your own, you take a big risk.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get. They'll say one thing and it's not true. They'll say the horse is 7 years old and the horse is 25 years old.
And we run into that problem too. You know,
yes,
we do. We say, you know, the horses will be, they'll come in as, you know, a 10-year-old or whatever. And we look at the teeth and we're not professionals about being able to tell.
But we've been around.
But we're kind of good about it, yeah. And then we'll go ahead and find out that when we take him to the equine dentist, oh, that horse is a little bit older than that. Or, hey, surprise, that horse is a lot younger. So we're like, oh, yeah, that's great. But, you know, that doesn't make the horse bad in any way. So what are we going to do on Saturday this week? We're going to the auction, right?
Yes. The auction.
Yeah, so
this Saturday.
Yeah, pretty soon. And we're going to be heading up with two auctions this time around. We're going to go to a daytime auction, and then we're heading over to the
nighttime
auction. Yeah, and it's going to be a pretty long day for all of us and all the kids that are going with us. But I think everybody will be great, and our goal is to save as many lives as we can.
So we got to get 9 lives.
Yeah, we got to. It's my birthday month, and I've always wanted to save a lot of horses. And I can't save 63. I can't save 36, but I'm asking to save 9. It's 6 plus 3 is 9. And right now we have almost enough to rescue 4.
Woohoo!
So 4 is better than none, but we still got 5 to go. So if we can get everybody to get in as many donations as we possibly can between now and Saturday about 11 o'clock is the cutoff time, then we would really, really appreciate it. So, but I want to thank everybody for listening to our podcast today, and thank you, Brandy, for coming.
Not a problem. Thank you for all the questions. I appreciate them.
And I hope that this helped you guys all out. And feel free to contact us at any time. So until next week, rock on, everybody.